I talk a lot about the electric cupcake in recruitment, about how recruiters love to make the same mistake again and again. And I've been guilty of it with exactly this, like moving out of the niche and seeing that sort of easy win. In recruitment, if there's an easy win, it's very rarely an easy win. It's a problem in disguise.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm joined today by Toby Babb. Toby is the founder and CEO of Harrington Star Group. Harrington Star was launched in 2010 and focuses on the financial technology sector. They've got offices in London and New York. The group also owns the North Star, which is a specialist technology, sales, talent acquisition business. And interestingly, Toby hosts the FinTech Focus podcast and FinTech Focus TV. He's also the chairman of the FinTech Influencers Networking Community. Toby's been in the recruiting industry for 21 years. He spent the last 10 years in leadership roles with two listed recruiting groups. He's been named Agency Leader of the Year and Entrepreneur of the Year by Recruiter Magazine. Welcome, Toby. It's great to meet you.
Well, it's lovely to be here and great to meet you too. Really love what you're doing with the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really cool to interview a fellow podcaster. How long have you been doing the FinTech Focus podcast?
Do you know what? We've been doing it on and off for a while, and we never had this sort of continuity. So we'd use it as a way of sort of, you know, bringing our clients into the office, and pre-COVID, we'd do it all in-house, and they come into the office. I think we started it back in maybe 2016, 17 or so, and we'd do maybe 3, 4, 5 a year or so, or something. It would be very ad hoc. And then this time last year, we sort of saw a lot of confusion out there from clients, and we wanted to have something there where we could engage with our customers. And so for the last year, pretty much, I've been doing 3 shows a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then we do a review show on Sundays. And then Nadia, who is one of the an initial crew we brought into the business, who's our chief customer officer, she does a DE&I show on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So 6 days a week. Cool. We've got content coming out on podcasts, and it's been great fun.
That's amazing. What do you feel is the benefit of doing a podcast? Because it is quite a lot of work. Yeah. And so why do you guys do it? Why bother?
Two, three reasons. The first of which is, and I'll throw some light here to our marketing team. Scott is absolutely fantastic, and he's accompanied by a brilliant crew in Alexandria and Georgia who do a great job in really sort of putting this content out there and making sure it maximizes its reach. Now, that's a clue to why we do it. Its reach is getting bigger and bigger. And if I'm going to sit there and say, right, we want to push the brand out to our candidates, to our clients, to consultants who want to work with us, it's going to take a lot of calls to get 20,000 views on LinkedIn that we can do by putting a podcast out. And you put that one bit of content out there, and it's going to reach 20,000 people. That to me is 20,000 points of contact that you've got with people who can engage with your brand. Alongside that, I think a year ago we wanted to make sure I was leading from the front, and I wanted to have conversations on a C2C level with potential customers and existing customers, and make sure we were there and engaging with them. And over the course of the last year or so, through the podcast, through the we do the Financial Technologies magazine, and through webinars and debates that we've hosted and roundtables and all these sort of things, we've had multiple ways of engaging with our customers. While other people have just been sort of pulling backwards, we've been much more on the offense with our marketing. And we sort of made the conscious decision a year ago to significantly increase our advertising spend, our marketing spend, our marketing team has trebled over the course of the last 12 months. And I see it now as being this sort of pivotal business development tool for us in the business. But it's also a great way of us helping and being seen to be a professional service within the industry, which is something I'm very passionate about. Alongside that, my view is working for a recruitment business has to be of value to you. So my job is to make sure the guys have got the best tools, the best technology, the best systems, the best processes, the best training, the best learning and development, the best peers, the best support to allow them to be successful. But what they should also have is a stream of inbound business that comes to them based off the relationships that I'm having and building with these leaders across the business. Now, I never push it. I never sit here and say, in any of the podcasts, you should be using us and give us your jobs and all that sort of stuff. I just talk to them about their business and their challenges and their opportunities and why they're good. And all of a sudden, over the course of last year, when everything's been as difficult as it has, we've had a strong and consistent flow of inbound business coming to us that's made it easier for my team to do their jobs. And the more we can do that and then build exclusive relationships and retain relationships off the back of that, that should be the superpower of working for Harrington Style, that you've got great tech suite, you've got systems and processes that allow you to be successful at your job, you're trained and pushed to be better, you've got the right mentorship and support and team around you to cross-sell, and that you've got a brand there that's going to go to work for you and be your... I always think about those sort of 1920s films where they have the horseshoe and the boxing glove. I want Harrington Star to be the horseshoe and the boxing glove for those guys, to make it easier for them to do it, to give them an unfair advantage against their competition.
Wow, that's a great explanation, Toby. So thank you. I agree 100%. I think, in fact, it's something I believe in to the extent that for my Inner Circle coaching group, I'm running a little course on how to start and grow a successful podcast for recruiters, because I think it's such a powerful platform for all the reasons you just said. And for me, what allows you to do is to really elevate your personal and business brand by... And go from just another recruiter, of which there are, you know, thousands and thousands, and really step up into a leadership role within your ecosystem, within your market niche, and not use it as a platform to pitch, but just if you're bringing value and you're wanting to help, genuinely serve and help your audience to with their businesses and their growth and their journey, then that will definitely come back to you, right? That's my philosophy, anyway.
100%. It's a philosophy that's got some credibility to it. You know, I can point to hundreds of thousands of pounds over the last year, which is directly referenceable to the work that we've been doing around community. In fact, I would probably say that that 60% of our business now has moved to inbound business, and that's a great position to be in. In a pandemic, or any sort of stage, and I think we can make it even bigger. And I'm really passionate about doing and believing that. But I think it fundamentally comes down to first and foremost doing the right thing. It's about making sure you're there. And I think that the I've been in the industry for 21 years now. I started in January 2020, January 2000, should I say? And at that sort of stage, it's a very, very different industry. You sort of went out there, you speculated, you got the jobs, and you'd filled the jobs. And it was more of a master servant sort of relationship, in my opinion. It was a transaction. And I think what's happened, and what I've loved over the course of the last decade in particular, is it's become much more of a genuine professional service. And you're expected to go into a customer and be able to do more than just put bums on seats. You're there and you're able to advise and consult. Look, recruitment consultant's been a misnomer for many years because it's just been a recruitment salesperson, right? You haven't really consulted on anything. You've gone out there, you've taken a brief, and you've put things that match that brief over to the customer and then done your job around it. Consultancy in its truest sense is about helping people make the right decisions and being the expert in a space to help them grow and build their teams. And you speak to any individual of any business that you speak to across the world, no matter what industry they're in, and almost certainly, I would say the percentage will be off the scale as to what their biggest and most important aspects and priority would be in their business is their people. You've got a terrible product, you put great people on it, that product can become great. You've got a great product but terrible people, that product's not going to sell anywhere, and it's going to it's going to erode. So people are the fuel of everyone's success, and I think if you are they're unable to be a trusted advisor, consigliere to these sort of businesses. If you're there and you are a genuine consultant in what you're doing, you're able to garner that trust that excludes competition, that makes your business more efficient because you are their go-to and you're their partner and you're there and you aren't in the foot race for contingent work against four or five other agencies in a very slim respect business. You're there as an extension of a business that's helping companies to solve their biggest problem, which in our world, our technology world that we work in at the moment, is everyone's biggest issue. Everyone needs to grow. Everyone's looking for people, but they're in a foot race and every good technologist right now, every Python developer, every security specialist is going to have three, you know, who's worth their salt, is going to have three, four different opportunities. So you've got to help that particular customer stand out, get their EVP, get their proposition, get their value right. And if we're able to elevate their brand through podcasts or through a magazine or through, you know, events or introductions or whatever it is we can do to consult them and help them tell that story in a better way, then I think you become a genuine consultancy and a genuine professional service and standardized professional service that people want to come into and be what this industry should be about, which is the most important of all those. You've got a good lawyer, another professional service, it's important, but not essential. You've got a good accountant, it's important, but again, you can have a mediocre accountant and still run a really great business. You've got a management consultant, important, but if you're failing to plug the right people into your business, it's got to be, in my view, it's got to be seen that genuine professional service aspect of recruitment joins that echelon of the professional services giants in terms of its respect as an industry to allow people to really stand out and solve their biggest problem.
I love that. I couldn't agree more, Toby. And it all sort of ties together because it's almost like in order to earn that respect and to be perceived as that trusted advisor on a peer level with your customers, where you are considered a true professional service, you need to demonstrate that, right? You need to demonstrate that in the way that you engage with your marketplace and the value that you're bringing, the knowledge and the expertise and so on. And I feel like you need to do that first before the customer will, you know, the benefits will follow from there. You can't expect it to happen the other way around, where people will immediately understand the value that you're bringing and perceive you as that trusted advisor. So I feel like what you're doing at Harrington Star is like a perfect example of that, with the magazine, the videos, the podcast. I'm fascinated that you've got 60% of your new business is now coming from inbound. That in itself is impressive, but what people maybe don't even appreciate, which we need to point out, is the quality of those inbound leads, insofar as if they've come to you because they've seen your content or they've, you know, heard you on a podcast, or they already perceive you as having that expert status, and they're already sort of pre-sold in a way. They've bought into you. They perceive you as being credible. So then the ability to, you know, earn that exclusive or retained search is so much easier, right?
Yeah, absolutely. These are people out there who've got a problem, who've understood that, you know, that you're talking about that issue and positioning yourself as a advisor, a trusted advisor in the space, someone who knows what they're talking about in that space. Mm-hmm. And they'll come to you. And look, the danger of it is, and we've fallen foul of this over you know, various incarnations of our content journey at various different stages, is that you have to make sure that you are selling in it at the same sort of stage. So you know, sometimes you can be so obsessed with providing a great content platform that you forget to say what you do for the day job. People see you as that sort of, that magazine company or that that video company or the podcast, and you've got to make sure that there is that sort of without it being a sell, you're talking about the recruitment aspect of it within there as well, and that comes from a little bit of feeling it out, and I think we've been doing some better and better on that over the course of last year. The other side of it is I see a lot of recruiters go into this sort of it's quite on trend, isn't it, the podcast journey at the moment for people. But I see people sort of play at it, do two or three, and then, as with most things recruiters do, stop it and then come back to it or fail to be bothered to follow it up. And I think, look, what I'll say is it's been a lot of work over a long period of time and a lot of investment. But I've fully believed in that investment since day one of doing it. Mm-hmm. And if we can put that into play, and you are consistent with it, and you're not just looking for results tomorrow, And this is what happens is people will go in there and think, right, I've done 3 podcasts and I haven't had a job back from it yet. I'll go off run on to something else. And it isn't about that. It's about continuing. We've been through a week for a year. And now we're in that phase where that work has meant that those people are coming to us. And you're absolutely right. The quality of lead is it's less a lead. It's more a job. And you're in that situation where you've done the deal almost from creating that sort of thing. When people are knocking at your door and saying, you know, as I say, this is 2 decades now where for probably 15 years of that, I never had a job called into me at any sort of stage with a client telling me, here's a job, can you help us? It was always attritional, outbound, competitive business.
Yes.
Other than, you know, your repeat business where people are coming back to new business to me, historically, had always been ring, 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 and the power of attrition. Now, new business to me, and bearing in mind, probably the mistake I've made over the years is as a leader, as we grew the business, is to go less client orientated and more internal, focused as a CEO. The last year is really, I'm grateful almost for it. And I know it's sort of unfashionable to say that, but I think it's been a really important year to have this pandemic to be able to, for us to turn a negative situation into a positive situation and get a lot better as a business. Because me focusing and putting my core team and my leadership team, again, were facing internally rather than externally. And we had this inverted pyramid where our customers were facing off to some of our least experienced people. And now to push that out the other way, and have Nadia as my chief customer officer. James Hounslow now is the CEO of the North Star business and running all of their new business initiatives. Myself talking to customers, at least 3 times, a week through the podcast, but then also the follow-ups and work around that sort of thing as well, has meant the credibility has increased dramatically. Mm-hmm. And we're able to bring in this flow of business that I think has been critical to us moving to a position now where over the last 6-7 months, we've never been more profitable on a per head basis as a business. And, we had a very tough April, May, June, July, August last year, but it was a period where we were able to pause, to stop, to get the scalpel out to what wasn't right with the business and fix what was. Really think about what we wanted to be and who we wanted to be and the original purpose and value that we wanted to have as a business. And from that, it's put us into a position to really be able to be in a great spot to grow, to thrive, to be able to add as much value as we can possibly give to our customer base. So you're right. Yeah, it's not just, right, these guys might be hiring, get onto it and build the relationship. These are people coming to you and saying, we want to be part of your tribe. We want to be part of this community. Right. We want to be engaged with all of this sort of stuff. And we've gone through that focus of knowing you, liking you, trusting you. And when it goes through that know, like, trust, the next part of it is buy. And then the parts after that are refer and repeat, or repeat and refer.
Right.
So they come back to you and they start telling other people about you. And it's a classic funnel, right? And it's a classic funnel because it works, and it works in all sorts of other areas of business. But as a recruitment industry, we've probably been lacking in some of the sophistication of sales processes.
100%. Toby, you touched on something I wanted to dig deeper in, which is you have been named by Recruiter Magazine in their Hot 100 list. So you're one of the 100 most successful recruiting companies in the UK as measured by GP per employee.
Yeah.
So that is a measure of how efficient, how productive you are as an organization. And if we think now, I don't know what the latest stats is post pandemic. I'm sure lots of businesses have gone under, but in January 2020, the staffing industry analysts said there were 31,000 recruitment companies in the UK. So to be in the top 100 out of 31,000 companies is that's quite an achievement. Could you break down for me, what do you believe are, say, the top 3 success factors that, I know there's so much that goes into that, achieving that outcome, but what would you say, like, according to the 80-20 rule, what's the 20% that's had the biggest impact on being so successful as a business?
So that's a great question. And, Yeah, the figures are stunning, aren't they? When you look at that as well. So I've heard up to 40,000 recruiters in the country. Yeah. And it's one of those sort of funny statistics, because there's an awful lot of individual trends, individual companies. So we've seen,
true,
despite the fact of the pandemic, I think we've probably seen an increase this year of recruiting companies as people go off and in their droves and do bedroom recruitment gigs.
That's true. Yeah.
And I think when you bring it down, it then says, right, how many of those companies are more than 10 people, and I think it sort of narrows the field significantly to maybe 10,000 or whatever it is there, and those above, excellent, then sort of grows out exponentially. But no, I'm really proud of being on that list. There's always a bone of contention because my numbers are different from theirs in terms of where we're at, but that, we'll take
okay.
that we'll take that into a different area. But if I look back to it and say, look, what are some of the key things to doing that? Look, number one, and probably goes without saying, as a recruitment business, and my passion for this is you can't do good numbers per head and grow a business without good people. So
right.
if you've got a good leadership team and you've got strong recruiters and you select well, those numbers become sort of inevitable. So you've got to have a good training program to get those people up to speed. You've got to have good people who are capable of stretching the numbers. So hiring and onboarding and retaining good people is essential to that.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at those businesses on that listing, they'll be good at doing that. And we've had, I've been very fortunate, and I'm very fortunate at the moment to work with a team, I think, are absolutely world class all the way through the organization, from marketing and back office all the way through to leadership and the sales team and delivery guys and everyone in between it. So if you've got people there who are good people, who are combined on a mission and enthusiastic about what they're doing and savvy and smart, then I think you're going to do well as a business. So we've been very fortunate to surround ourselves with great people. The second thing is to have something slightly different in terms of how you're going to marketplace. I think with 30,000 to 40,000 recruiters in the space, it is what some people would call a saturated marketplace, right? And I've heard people say, I don't want to work the UK market because it's overly saturated. It's the most mature recruitment market, I think, in the world. And because of that, you've got a lot of people who are peddling the same stuff in exactly the same way. So I think if you can go to market with something different and add that value and have different ways of engaging customers and supporting customers and a really strong customer strategy and candidate strategy alongside that as well. And content I put very much in, content and community I put very much at the heart of that, then I think that drives the performance there afterwards. The third thing, I would say that is put alongside, so good people, strong differentiator. I would say that niche is really important. You mentioned it earlier on as well. And I think the power of niche is really important. We could be all things to all people. And we've had temptations at various different stages to lurch into other areas, and you can see opportunities. But I think, when I look at businesses who are one day trying to find a very specific fixed income business analyst in an asset manager, and the next day trying to find support analyst for Nestle, you've got an advantage over speed, precision and control in terms of how you deliver to that customer. So niche, I think, has been important within that. And when you look at agencies who maybe struggle a little bit to grow an identity, that's something which I put into it then. And then alongside that, it's all of the one of the biggest reasons that I would say that from the numbers that you'll see in that Hot 100, we've probably doubled our figures over the course of this year.
Wow.
because of the efficiency gains that we've been looking at. So efficiency is working more exclusive and retain business. Efficiency is really having the focus on what's going to pay. Efficiency is technology and how we can make sure we're getting more out of every single aspect of what we're looking at. Looking at data and making sure the guys are making better decisions on what they're working at. Working with tech to stream out some of the things. Automation in terms of what we can do to automate some of the processes and tasks that we're doing. Allowing people to be what I call faster, better, stronger. So I want my consultants.
Can you say more about that?
Yeah, of course. So About 2-3 years ago, I was getting concerned about the sort of the disruption in the recruitment industry, in-house teams, automation, AI, et cetera, and I brought around 3 or 4 clients around the table. I brought a couple of recruitment experts, so people who've been in the industry for a long time. I brought around a couple of consultants and just said, look, let's just talk about the future of the recruitment space. And we looked at, we broke it down to what it was about, and we looked at the challenges across the industry. And realistically, it came down to the fact that, in its truest sense, it's about putting the best people into the best jobs. But this is the consultancy aspect is what gets left out by the automation part. The skill, right, and the art and the craft. There's the science of recruitment and the art and the craft of recruitment. The art of craft is the salesmanship, the persuasion, the encouragement, the wooing, the seduction, all of these sort of different areas of the storytelling, of allowing people to do that. And when it becomes more competitive, you've got to get even more important and better at that. So we looked at it and said, right, automation means that people and the digital world means people are looking for things faster. They're also going to be looking for stronger relationships with their consultancy partners, and they're going to be looking, and you've got to have better consultants who aren't just there to be CV matching people, because that's what robots now do, but people who are there to be able to advise, to consult, to intelligently move people and provide a solution-based sale for customers. So we came back down to it to say that after doing that and taking all the notes and throwing it into it and looking at the thing, that actually I thought the health of the industry was in rude health. Despite the challenges of technology and in-house teams and cost reduction and friction reduction and all these different things that you can look at, actually, the importance of people had never been more pronounced than it was at the moment. And what it came down to was we needed to be faster. So we needed to find solutions quicker for people who had that on-demand digital desire to see things happen overnight. Because you want your banking app, you want your Uber, you want your Deliveroo, you want all of these things to basically, people have got used to things happening fast for them. So we've got to make sure we're looking at technology and automation to make sure the responses and the engagement is happening consistently and quicker and faster, and our Boolean searching and our access to candidates and clients happens as quickly as possible for people. We've got to make sure those relationships are stronger. So we're not just talking about job master servant recruitment, but better consulting services. Mm-hmm. And we've got to look at better consultants who aren't just, as I say, CV matches. And we thought, right, if we can put that into action, we won't only be able to just grow progressively as a team, but we may be able to explode and see the next sort of 5 years, 10 years, be transformational for us as a business after 10 years of being in existence so far.
Love it. That sounds super cool. Before I go to my next question, I'd like to share one of the keys to my success in recruitment and in business. You may have noticed that a lot of the people I interview on this show have a coach. That's not a coincidence. Most high achievers have a coach, including me. I've worked with various coaches over the last 20 years, and it's been a huge factor in my own personal and business growth. Here's why. Sometimes it's hard to see the forest for the trees, and it really helps to take a step back and look at how you can improve the business and get a fresh outside perspective from someone who's bringing new ideas and insights to the table. Plus, as a business owner, who is holding you accountable and helping you stay on track? So I want to encourage you, if you're not already working with a coach, get one. It doesn't have to be me. There are plenty of amazing coaches out there. Just find someone who you believe will add measurable value to your business and can help you get to the next level. If you do want to explore a coaching relationship with me, then you're welcome to apply for a free 30-minute strategy session at recruitmentcoach.com/breakthrough. This is not a sales call. My number one objective is to help you to get clear on your goals, identify the roadblocks that are holding you back, and create a strategic plan to increase your billings and grow your business. I promise you'll leave our session feeling focused, re-energized, and excited to take your business to the next level. You can apply at www.recruitmentcoach.com/breakthrough. If I can just recap on some of the stuff you've been sharing. So number one, your three things were, first of all, it's all about people, which is not surprising. Hiring the right people and then developing and retaining them is critical for every business, and recruiting, especially. So in some sense, like, this becomes one of your top strategically important things as a CEO, right? Is really ensuring that that you have systems, processes in place for achieving that. And I think this is where a lot of recruiting companies struggle, ironically, is, you know, with that internal recruiting piece. Oh, and by the way, my colleague, Leanne Sarah Jones Hunt, said to say hi to you. She, before getting into the coaching industry, ran a rec-to-rec business. She said placed several people with you back in the early days.
That's amazing. Star. How funny is that? How is she?
Great. Yeah, she is a dynamo. She's done wonders for my business. She's helping me to really scale what I'm doing. So anyway, yeah, I will do. I will do. So it's that people part. Then the differentiation, it was the second piece. And then the third is niche. I think, you know, definitely all three of those are powerful. This is a bit of a tangent, but I guess that asked this a lot. You mentioned temptation and versus staying true to your niche. And I think that temptation is never greater than when you have a great client, you've got that relationship and they move to a new company, which is outside of your core market. And that's where the temptation is to follow the person because they know you, you know, work well together, but it would take you outside of your wheelhouse and mean that you're not able to be as efficient. You don't have the network. You don't have to, you could do the job, right? No question that, you know, you guys are good at filling jobs and you could fill it, but it's pulling you away from your kind of niche. What's your thoughts on that situation?
So I've got quite strong thoughts on that situation, okay. Mainly because I've been burnt by it in the past. So, Harrington Star is a financial technology recruitment business, and at various stages in our growth, there were times when things came to us that looked like they were great opportunities, and I think there's a major music streaming business that's a very glamorous name to have on your roster, and they came to us and it was an old colleague of mine who'd gone internally and said, look, we've got these 9 positions that we want to fill. And I was thinking, right, that's not financial technology. I said, that's not what we do. And she says, yeah, but they're the positions that you would fill. So developers and support analysts and all this sort of stuff. And it was very glittery, and you sort of suddenly start to put the maths together, and you look at what you can do, and you put the fees up there, and you think, right, okay, that could be really, you know, and it's a great name, and it's a great company. And we moved away from it, and we weren't experts in that field. You know, we were experts in financial technology. So what I did was we went in there and we did a clumsy job. We did all right, but it wasn't a spectacular job within it. And whilst we got a couple of fees out of it, I don't think we did. You know, we weren't at the standard of what we wanted to do, because whilst they were the same jobs, it wasn't from the same niche we were working. We were just another ordinary agency within it. And my big thing, what I kicked myself most about wasn't the fact that we just didn't do a great job with the customer, which annoyed me anyway, is how I let down my team insofar as moving them away from work that they could have been doing in that space. So whilst they were working on this, what were they missing out on the other side from that? So I think it was probably one of the least profitable moves that I made at any sort of stage to go in that and sort of chase the bucks as opposed to the plan. And I think when you look at that, we've been caught on it maybe 2-3 times at various different stages. And you sort of, there's a episode of The Simpsons that I always refer to in this where Bart and Lisa basically leaves these electric cupcakes and that does a lab rat against the and then Bart, and he keeps going back and touching the electric cupcake. And I talk a lot about the electric cupcake in recruitment, about how recruiters love to make the same mistake again and again. And I've been guilty of it with exactly this, like moving out of the niche and seeing that sort of easy win. In recruitment, if there's an easy win, it's very rarely an easy win. It's a problem in disguise, and I think when we've moved out of niche, we haven't done a great job of it. Now, the different part of it is, look, I want to be a bit. Our vision is to have a group of companies that service different niches within it, and North Star's looking a route into that as well. So we wanted to create opportunities for people in the brand. We didn't want it to be another Harrington style that came out and competed directly with it. So we looked at technology sales as an area where we saw massive opportunity and demand within customers. And James has gone out to do that, but that's his niche now, and he's moving into that sort of area, and that's the world that he moves into. Now, even yesterday, we were having that debate, saying that there's more stuff that's coming into us from, you know, from retained searches where they're saying you've done a great job for us on the sales side, can we look at this? And again, you've got to be really disciplined to make sure that you are still going out to market and not diluting your brand within what you're doing there as well. So it's the next phase of challenge, seeing that come up later on as well. So yeah, doing that, and ultimately we'll have we'll be launching a new brand at the end of this year, which looks at the media world. We'll be looking at various different areas, but we've got to make sure that that's our growth pattern that's based around that, as opposed to saying, you know, we're going to be this, that, or the other, and be a generalist agency, because it works for some people, but it's definitely not our go-to-market.
I wanted to ask you, because you have also got an office in New York, I believe. What do you perceive as being the difference in recruitment in the style done in the UK versus the US? Like, have you had to adapt what you do, or have you just exported the Harrington Star way and then rolled it out in America?
Joe, it's really interesting that. And I think, you know, there's things again there that we've got wrong over time, and things that we've got right with that US business. And I think, you know, we probably went in quite arrogantly with a very UK centric model to it. So, you know, it's been useful for us. It's worked for us over here. Let's lift it and put it over there. Our clients are out there. You know, demand led us to go out to go out there, and we'll just do the same. Which is fine. Yeah, I think you can interact with customers in exactly the same way, but the difficulty comes into the nuances of your people. And yeah, as you will know, traditionally it's a much more salesperson versus recruiter split out there, and we sort of kept it very 360. And the difficulties that we've had with that over the last few years is having a 360 model is difficult to scale and grow and bring people into your business. And we're sort of moving into more and more that sort of delivery and sales methodology out there, and learning a lot about it. I think UK recruiters quite arrogantly see it as the streets are paved with gold out there, the fees are bigger, the salaries are bigger, everything's bigger, brighter, easier, et cetera. But it's definitely not easy. And there's some excellent, outstanding recruitment that goes on in the US. And we've had to learn and pivot to an extent and adapt. But I think if we can bring some of the things that we've got that are great into that US market and really sort of build a lot more around the community aspects of what we're doing out there, and provide that platform for inbound business, you know, within it, it is a wonderful place to do business. And I love going out there and haven't been out there now for well over a year, which is killing me. But to get back out and really see that US business grow is going to be something I'm very, very excited about over the next 5 years or so.
It is exciting. Absolutely. Toby, could you elaborate a little more on what were the things that you felt did translate, and that, you know, the Harrington Star methodology actually went down fantastic in the States? And what are the things specifically that you had to adapt in order for it to play over there?
Yeah, no, I think there's, again, it comes down to, in terms of service offering, I don't think there's a tremendous difference. I think customers, you know, over here, over there, are looking for good people. They're looking for, I think there's a difference in the way people buy, which is quite interesting. So I think there's what I would call more tire kicking in the States. So people are happier to have that sort of conversation where they're looking to go gung-ho into hiring, and they sort of retreat back a little bit. So when is a job a job? When you've actually got, you know, that real engagement out in the US. So I think you've got to be a lot more. Mm-hmm. We went in and were quite naive to thinking, right, okay, in the UK, when you've got someone engaged and they're giving you a job, the likelihood is they're serious about hiring and they're in a process. Over there, it's always seemed that people are less happy to give you a direct no on things, which is, you know, in contrast sometimes with the sort of US psyche that I think it's probably a little bit more. They don't like saying no, so they'll sort of bring you into a process, and you might not be as engaged. So I think we've had to be a lot more direct on who's hiring and getting people into that process, and pushing for more exclusivity, because I think it can be a lot less inefficient. So a lot less efficient. So if I look at our business and say, have we had, have we got a better hit rate in terms of, are we converting more of our business of the jobs that we pull in the UK than we are in the US? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I think we've had to really adapt to that style of buying, and making sure that we're, mm-hmm. The discovery phase, the qualification phase is that much better. Mm-hmm. I think the whole concept of scaling has been difficult in terms of, I go back to that first point of finding talent, and finding talent who are happy to do that full 360 piece. And you put people in there who've been used to the delivery side, who say they want to become BD, and then actually sort of struggle with the BD element. That's been something which I think has been incredibly challenging for us over that sort of period. In terms of what you can take over that works well, and this is something which I think we can do loads better, is I fully believe that adding value, that community, that content, that helping people and engaging with people through different methodologies is absolutely something that translates from here to there.
Totally.
I think the fundamental basics of the five keys of the job, as I call them, so world-class qualification of job, world-class qualification of candidate, attract, engage, and retain the right clients, attract, utilize, and maximize the right candidates, and build your brand. Those five things are the fundamental crux of what we do in the UK. And I think that's fundamentally the same five things that are going to make you successful in recruitment in the US. The difference in the US is it might be that some people do one side of that and some people do the other side of it.
Yeah.
And I think that segmentation, and it's happening more and more actually over here. Our North Star business, for example, has... it is that. I have a sales team and a delivery team, and we're going through the whole flow chart of how they're working. And it may well be that that's, the new world of recruitment as opposed to anything else, and moving the Harrington Star oil tanker around to that way of working might take a bit of time to get that into position. But I think it actually makes sense. Well, you've got experts. And if you look at soccer, you put your goalkeeper in goal and your striker up top. Your striker doesn't play in goal one day.
Good analogy.
So genuine experts in their positions is a new, it's a new phenomenon. It's absolutely not a new phenomenon, but it's a new thing for us to be getting our head around. And I think that's the big thing that we potentially could have done better out in the US.
This is not a new debate, is the 360 versus 180 versus even 120, like splitting the job up into the component, aspects, whether it's delivery, whether it's sales and BD. and I can definitely see pros and cons. I do, because I was raised as a 360 recruiter. And I do think that it's a hard job. Like there's no question juggling everything, all those spinning plates to do well at it. I would say, looking back, I wasn't fantastic at it. I did pretty well. And, it's all relative. Within my firm, I was really successful. I was like in the top, 15, 20% out of 200 billers. But, I don't think it was very good. And I think partly is there is always that tension between BD and delivery, and people take their foot off the gas for BD because like, oh, I've got all these jobs. And then it's like the peaks and troughs happen. Whereas I wonder if you do have someone who's 100%, on the BD and someone who's 100% on the candidate delivery, whether the output overall is higher. What do you, and you're running this as a live experiment because you've got both models running concurrently. What?
In two different businesses, it's a really interesting thing to look at. And North Star's been running under that remit for 4 or 5 months now, 4 months. So it's 4 months since we sort of made that change. So it's, you can't necessarily put it as a, as a, there's not enough data to give you a real answer to that right now. What I will say is their start's been absolutely stunning. And they've been winning great business. They've been getting great projects and retainers and doing a different way of doing it. But you look at it on a per head basis, and it's roughly similar sort of numbers
that the guys are doing.
Now, that might be because it's on that evolution of journey, and those numbers which they're doing may then flip and double. But I think there's capacity sometimes within scalable businesses. You'll see odds and ones and twos will be the million-pound billers here and there. But the average always comes down to, I mean, you look at that Hot 100 list, and it sort of sort of centers around 120 to 130 thousand per head, and that's not an unusual sort of number. So you look at that and say, right now, for the last 3-4 months, that the group that we've got has been averaging about 21-22 thousand pounds a head, which is a big step in the right direction, and the sort of levels which are where I want it to go. So how do we then take that sort of 240-250 average and turn it into 400-500. Well, that's the average number, the average performance. Now, some of that might be that we put people in the right seats. Some of it might be that we increase the marketing and all these tools. Some of it might be we increase efficiency by where they invest their time, by making the right calls and the right discovery. Some of it might be the technology, which allows them to be faster and better. But actually, it's probably a sort of smorgasbord of all these things being thrown together to allow you to constantly be looking. This is why one of our key values as a business is Kaizen, Japanese manufacturing principle of continuous improvement taken from Toyota. Yes. And I firmly believe in Kaizen, which is constantly looking to iterate and improve, not just change things all over the place, but constantly looking at where are the efficiency gains, where can we get better, and where can we keep on moving that further forward. Now, I'm a believer that some people will be awesome 360 consultants.
Yes.
And I felt that my success as a recruiter came from being able to bridge that link between the candidates I was doing and be able to sell them to the customers who I was working with and be in charge of that full cycle. I see other people who are great BD people who are very frustrated by the candidate work and don't like that sort of, they're constantly looking for the thrill of the new. Other people are great at nurturing, converting and spreading and landing and expanding within customers, but they're not great at the new business side of it. Other people are great marketeers and brand builders. Other people are great with candidates and actually don't then have the confidence to then take it out, but you give them a brief and they'll find people within seconds and attack that sort of thing and be able to turn that around. So intuitively from that, what I'm saying is pay people to the right job and don't have any sort of predication into where you're forcing and channeling those people into. It's got to be something there where you are identifying and playing to the strengths of those individuals.
Do you know what? I think you're absolutely right. Now that we've talked that round, it's probably a case of there's not one perfect business model, and it makes more sense to have either option available within the business based on the individual and their strengths and the direction that they're going to perform best. The role they're going to perform best in, right?
People get shoehorned into the wrong thing. They end up And what happens is that attrition in the recruitment industry of people who could have been great doing something, but are literally just doing the wrong job, and they could have had long and great careers, but because of a sort of snobbishness around maybe a delivery consultant. But my view has always been, if people aren't finding the candidates, you haven't got, and someone's finding great clients all the time, but you're not fulfilling it, you're not going to do any business. So which one's more important than the other? The answer is, in my opinion, they're both as important as each other. If someone's not finding your candidates, they're not going to do business. If someone's not finding clients, but they've got loads of candidates, you're not going to do business. Both hands work symbiotically together, and we've got to make sure that we're showing that there is a credible and prestigious pathway for careers in both aspects for people to go down those routes, playing to their strengths.
Fantastic. It's a great point. I'd like to explore that further. First, you rattled off 5 points. It was almost like this was part of the Harrington Star way of doing things. What do you call that? Like, you had five kind of core principles of how to,
so sorry,
how to
the
perform.
The five keys is what we call
five
it.
Keys.
So we work with Simon Hartley, who's a sports psychologist by trade, and he worked with an Olympic swimmer called Chris Cook. And they looked at the five keys of what helped him swim two lengths of the pool as quickly as he possibly could. So his job wasn't to win gold. It was to swim two lengths of the pool as quickly as he possibly could. We believe that our job is to place as many of the right people in as many of the right jobs as we can to allow us to grow profitably. And we said, right, let's look at that and say, right, where are we going to be 8 out of 10 in everything, and then try and move it to 9 out of 10. And then when we're at 9 out of 10, how do we move it to 10 out of 10? And then we'll recalibrate and bring it back down to 8 and say, how do we keep on improving those sort of things? And those five keys, when we boiled down the job, came into five things that we really believe drive great recruitment, that help us in our purpose to be the top 1% of the industry, to be the best in the industry at what we do, to create world-class recruitment that allows people to grow their brands, teams, and networks. So if we looked at that and boiled it down, we said that, and this is something which I'm very passionate about, goes back to day one in recruitment, the thing that I got taught to be as good as I possibly could at right at the very start, is I think there's a lot of people who point at lucky recruiters. And they're lucky recruiters because they don't seem to do as much, but they always seem to get the deal done with a customer. So their hit rate might be, you know, X percentage compared to someone else's, you know, percentage, which is three times less. So they get three times more for the same amount of work, and that they get called lucky because of it. For me, there's no luck in that. That's about that's about investing your time in the right areas. And that comes down from world-class qualification of job. So if you pull an opportunity, a requirement in from a customer, and you absolutely understand that, not just, you know, what the skills you need, what's the interview process, when are you paying me, but you manage that expectation, you craft it, you understand it, you get the story, you understand what they're looking to do, you've got all that information, your ability to be able to sell that job, to be able to influence, you've got the information to impact and influence people. And that's your job. You know, you need to gather that information. So I see people saying, I've just taken the job spec, and I've seen them on the phone for 5 minutes and think, how on earth have you got enough in there to be able to,
absolutely,
to be able to, world class is about putting yourself in a process where a retainer or exclusivity or interview slots are inevitable part of that process. And when you're able to sell people into that process and you're able to put all of those things together, that they become really, really important parts of the whole process. So I think it starts with that. Alongside that, people lose control of candidates all the time because they never really spent the time to understand them or to share their vision. They're just sort of seeing it as a transaction. So world-class qualification of candidate comes into their hopes, dreams, aspirations, desires, key points. You know, why am I looking to leave this job? I'm stagnant. And then you take stagnant and write it on a piece of paper and then say, and get surprised when they say they're actually leaving staying because of something else. You said, but you were stagnant. Oh yeah, but now they've changed their mind. It's all these things which make the job more easy for you. Attracting, engaging, and retain the right clients is about making sure you're constantly building a pipeline of new businesses to work with, but you're engaging and retaining those customers to make it much more efficient for you so they keep coming back. You know, the top billers will do good chunks of their business with 2-3 different companies and then be supplementing it with other people as well. So they're go-to for those businesses. Attract, utilize, and maximize the right candidates. So attracting the right candidates, constant pipeline of good candidates coming into you. Utilizing means that you're getting information and leads and market knowledge, et cetera, from them. But you're also taking them out to the marketplace and knocking on the doors and creating heat and hype around that particular candidate. So you're not just sending them over to a job and waiting for the answer, but you're actually taking that candidate and placing them as opposed to just filling jobs.
Yes.
And maximizing is all then about making sure that you've given them the best possible opportunity to get that interview. You know, someone says, go in there and tell me how it goes afterwards. Other people are saying, right, this is what they're talking about. This is how you can do it. This is some of the information about them. This is some of the pack that I can present to you. This is how, you know, you need to approach this part of the interview. This is who you're going to be meeting, et cetera, et cetera. And then the fifth key is build a brand, about making sure you are famous in your space, making sure that people know about you, utilizing social media, you're having information that comes through to you, that you are that you're someone who's central to your community, that you're constantly a beacon of knowledge and insight and information. And so when people go through that process that I spoke about before, they know you, they like you, they trust you, and then they're ready to buy, repeat, and refer. And if you can look at those and constantly reevaluate yourself on those five keys and say, right, how is my job qualification? How is my candidate qualification? What's my client attraction like? What's my candidate attraction like? What's my brand building like? People will go up and down at various different stages, like a spidergram, and you'll see various mm-hmm. different parts of where they are. And there might be 4 out of 10 at one stage and 8 out of 10 at the others. How can we move each part of it consistently further forward and see that person develop to become the ultimate recruiter who's 10 out of 10 in all of those sort of areas, which will never happen.
Yes.
And it will constantly need to be calibrated and looked at. But how can we look at those and say, right, to me, I look at the job and I think if you can be bloody good at those five things, I think you've got a great chance of being a sustainable, consistent recruiter. And I see lots of spikes and peaks and troughs. Sustainability and consistency is the unglamorous part of the recruitment.
Yeah,
I think make the glamorous parts happen.
Do you use this as a scorecard, like where people measure themselves in those five areas, or?
So we have done it various different phases, and we go through. In honesty, we go through different cycles of it. We're looking at a quarterly review now system, which mm-hmm. is coming back into play. I love doing it. We used to do it as teams. And have Red Arrow sessions, which we took from the Red Arrows. We had a leader of the Red Arrows come and talk to us about the importance of debrief. So we looked at debrief and said, look, these are the five things that we wanted to do. And every week we'd sit there and we'd be hold each other to accountable and stab each other in the front about what those keys might be. My keys are slightly different, of course. So it's a running the business.
Yes.
I look at making sure people are able to do those five keys is 25% of it. I look at hiring and retention. I look at finance, I look at client engagement and brand, I look at all these different areas of what I do, and everyone will have slightly different focuses on what they want to do well. So in answer to your question, I think we need to make sure we are becoming better at consistently reviewing. And this is everything's about consistency. We spoke about it beforehand, about podcasting, about staying the course. And to take my own medicine, what I've got to do with that is make sure that we are really good at consistently appraising people on things that we know are the critical aspects of the job.
Absolutely. That's brilliant, Toby. Let me ask you one last question, which is what would you say has been one of the biggest mistakes that you've made in the last 10, 11 years since you founded the business that was it learned, and what did you learn from it?
So there's been plenty, so I'm going to try and buy some time to narrow that down. No, I think one of the big things, I mentioned people beforehand, right? And people is the fuel of any business, something which I talk about all the time. And I've within that, coming back to that whole thing of trying to be disciplined about staying in your wheelhouse and niche and all that sort of thing, there was an opportunity that came to me to look at a new business and launch something that was complementary to our niche, but it was slightly outside that comfort zone. So it's to start an executive search business within the space. And someone came to me who was by reputation and CV a very, very strong option for us. And what I got hypnotized by was the upside as opposed to the sort of real gut that I was doing. I was suppressing my gut. So you spoke about this sort of the problem of the industry is its recruitment at various different stages. I it's cobbler's shoes, isn't it? We advise companies about great recruitment and we never take our own advice about it. My advice would have been, if I'd been talking to someone and I had any doubt around this, would be with that sort of investment, if there's doubt, there's no doubt. And I should have walked away from it. Instead, this blaring thing on my shoulder was upside, 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 upside. And I invested a lot of time, a lot of effort and a lot of money into a failed proposal of going into something with the wrong person and the wrong team. And I've my whole career has been based and built around organic growth and seeing people come through and backing your people through businesses. And now seeing James come through and do such a cracking job with North Star, I am adamant that that giving people the opportunities, even if they're a lot less experienced, to go in there and just see the animation, the enthusiasm, the passion of what they can do to build brands within your brand, knowing the DNA and knowing the standards and knowing all of that business. The standards were always miles off. The connection was miles off. The way that he went out the job was miles off. And it just ended up being a sort of fairly painful and expensive, you know, 6 to 12 months that I could have invested that time in doing so many other things so much better at the same time. So I think it's, you know, the lesson for me has been to trust the gut, to, you know, to back internally rather than to go externally. And if I'm going to go into things and I have doubt in it, then to, you know, trust that gut on it and make better decisions about what I'm doing.
Makes total sense. Toby, thank you so much. We're out of time for today. I've really enjoyed this, and I hope you'll come back and do it again sometime.
I would absolutely love to. Now there are dogs who are chorusing in the background as postmen go by. But I would say, look, thank you for bearing up with them, and it's been an absolute pleasure being on the show.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. If you've enjoyed the show, the best way you can show your support is to click that subscribe button. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.